prophecy about the grace of God in choosing Jacob over Esau, even though Jacob was the other. There's certainly a sermon there. However, I also found in myself, as I was studying and preparing for this, another sermon. And so I felt as if I wanted to go this way as we're going to find out rather than this. However, that is absolutely a very, very important way to understand and know this passage that God chooses this out of his grace. We've all been in high school, right? Most of us. I think most of us, as long as we start to graduate, when you want to have any plans, any wishes for our lives, right? We start to think where we want to go, what we want to do, that kind of thing. And as a 17-year-old boy living in St. Thomas, Ontario, I did not want to do anything with St. Thomas, Ontario. I wanted to get out of there, right? And the way to do that was, at least in St. Thomas, Ontario, was you get good grades and then you go to like a college or university. I applied to many different universities. I wanted to go into business. My math, that was where my strong suit was. My writing and English skills were never that good. And obviously, now I'm here, so take that for what you will. So I applied to all my business schools. I got accepted into every one. I applied. I could go anywhere and do anything. And that was my plan. I was St. Thomas. Of course, I wasn't college planning. One day, playing soccer. Some of you know the story. I was playing soccer, and my team was losing 5-0. My team was terrible. I had 3 or 4 really good players, of which I was one, of course. And the rest of the team was just terrible. I'd never played before. And we lost almost every game that year. We were losing 5-0. Coming up next to the game, I was actually on the bench, eating nothing. And the coach said, "Hey, you're going in." It was really dry. I'm not sure if it was like, so okay, so I ran on the field trying to finish my muffin, but I think I dealt with that at some point. And the defense, I never played defense before. I'm a striker. I also played in midfield, but never at center back. And the ball got in behind me, and the guy on the other team was running in towards goal, one-on-one. And I was running back as fast as I could to chase him, and as I was about to reach him, I got stopped, right? Goalie on my team, yes, on my team, and was big Dan. And he was big, 6'4", 300 pounds, massive, right? He could come running out. It's the first time I've ever seen him run. And literally, you only ever stay on your goal except for that one moment. He ran out and absolutely battered him, right? 4-3 bones here, I was out, ambulance was called, all that stuff. Spent the next few weeks, you know, bleeding or turning different colors of blue and purple and yellow. Things you never thought were possible on, right? But that moment was a moment where I got my back. I spent a couple weeks not doing anything because I couldn't. And all of a sudden, I was reflect on my future. You see, I was going to youth group regularly, and people were always telling me, "Hey, Jared, you should consider going to Harry Hills or the Bible College." There's no way I'm going to do that, right? But at the time, I was like, "No, I'm not doing that." Some people were seeing some things in me, like leadership qualities. Some people were. I don't know what they were thinking. But, that's what they were thinking, and they were kind of pushing down that path, and I was like, "No, I'm not doing that." And then God had other plans for me, didn't he? The question that I think our text asks today and answers as well is this. Is it better to live and submit to God's plan or my own? Is God's plan for my life really better for me than what I want it to be, right? Now, before we get going, I'm going to be using this word, this term called the will of God throughout the entire sermon. So I guess the premise, right? The will of God, and you should see on the screen, hopefully. Yeah, there it is. Will of God. The will of God includes everything that God desires or wishes to happen in heaven and on earth. It includes his plans in the future, Jesus returning, final battle of Armageddon, etc., right? And it also includes the things God desires or wants, God wills or wishes for us, say, to love our neighbor, sure most of us here, if we were to ask you something, how do you surrender your life to God's will? Do you want to live in God's will? I mean, I think most people would be like, yeah, absolutely, for sure. And yet, what is this all a question? You know, how many of you have completely surrendered every part of your life to God? Would you say yes to that? For example, what about your mind? Have you surrendered or given up the way that you spend all your money to God completely, right? Have you surrendered that to what God wills for us, the way that we should, you know, be able to spend our money, right? Examples we could go on and on about this, right? For example, dating wise, some of us here may be considering someone to be married to and who you're dating. And God makes it very clear in 1 Corinthians 7 that as Christians we should desire to marry believers only, not be married to ego. There are reasons for that. But it's God's will that believers marry believers. And yet, I have friends back home, and I'm guessing maybe there are some here as well. And submit to God's will, what He desires for us, how He desires for us to live? Or is it better to live my own way? That's the question. We're already going to open up to Genesis 27, where we're going to see this question asked in Genesis 27. And as we know from the story, we're going through Genesis. Last week, we go through Isaac's life, and in Genesis 27, we get the last major story of Isaac's life before he dies. This is the last. And he's old, okay? Much older than all of us are. So he wants to give the first part of it, right? He wants to give the blessing. He wants to give the blessing to the next generation. Someone, you know, if you guys are getting old, you want to write a letter and pass on what you have to someone else, father and children, right? But it's the same thing here. So he may want to be asking, well, what's the difference between a birthright and a blessing? Because in Genesis 25, we just read about it, you know, and if you read the next few verses, remember when Jacob tricks Esau, they give him the birthright, and now we see the word blessing. What's the difference? Actually, very little difference. The birthright is the expectation that the firstborn would receive the blessing, or receive the inheritance of the household. However, a blessing could be given to any of the children. In fact, it is possible for the head of the household to give the blessing, the right to inherit these things to someone else. The birthright wasn't binding, however, the blessing was. That's the difference, right? And we know that God made it very clear who should receive this, didn't he? We just read about it, right? Genesis 25, verse 23. What did God tell Rebecca when the babies were in her womb? They were fighting against each other. What did she say? Two nations in your womb. The people from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. And then it says, the older shall serve the younger. And then the babies came out. And who was the older? Esau. And the younger? Jacob. This is God's will for this family. God wants the younger to receive the blessing, to be the one which God fulfills his promises that he made to Abraham. God's making this very clear. Jacob will be greater than Esau. God is explicitly saying, Isaac, give the blessing to Jacob, but it's implicit right through here. Once again, this is what will happen. Jacob will be greater than Esau. God has predicted this, he foretold it, this is his will, right? And obviously, then it makes sense for Isaac, the father, he's getting old, he could bless Jacob then, right? He's going to bless Jacob, right? Right? Yeah, it's right there in the first verse, right? Right? Verse 1. Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see. He called Jacob. Oh, no, he didn't call Jacob. You guys don't know what happened. He called Esau. Here we go, right? Should it be Jacob? Or called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son," and he answered, "Hear me." He said, "Behold, I am old, and not the greatest. I do not know the beginning of my death. Your weapons, your quiver, your bow, and go to the field and hunt game for me and prepare for me delicious food, such as I love. And bring it to me so that I may eat and my soul may bless you before I die." This is it. Isaac wants to bless Esau. He wants to give him everything, right? Isaac should have blessed Jacob. But what was he doing here? You guys remember the passage we just read, Genesis 25? God says that Isaac should have blessed Esau instead. Because Isaac loved Esau more than he loved Jacob. That's why. Isaac here, he's playing favorites with his own family. This is not a great story. He's playing favorites. You want to mess up a family? It's today, right? Of course. There's one problem. God, in his sovereignty and in his providence, has worked it out so that Isaac would not be able to see who he's blessing. And now the drama starts, right? Verse 5. Now, Rebecca was listening. You could replace that with me trusting. It's the same thing, right? She was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. And Isaac, in an awesome way, she decided to go with her husband's decision, right? Model parenting, right here, guys. No, it's not. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and grain, Rebecca said to her son Jacob, here we go, right? "I heard your father speak to you, brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food, that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now, therefore, my son, obey your father." No. "Now, of course, I obey my voice, my family, as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two good young goats, so that I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves." Yeah, that'll make him feel better when he realizes he's the choice, right? He's the choice. The food's good. He probably would have enjoyed, you know, if his wife didn't deceive him in the first place. He probably would have loved that more than the food he's about to eat, but this irony just throughout the whole story. "And you shall bring it to your father to eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." So here's Rebecca's plan, right? And Jacob, the model son, he says, "Mom, what are you doing? This is a bad idea. We should listen to your husband, my father. He's the head of the household, and I don't want to cause division." Right? That's what Jacob says. He's such a great guy. No, what did he say? "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and he shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon himself and not a blessing. See, he likes the plan. He just doesn't want to be cursed as a result of it, right? He doesn't want to end up worse than what he is now. So his mother explained to him, "It's okay. Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go bring them to me." Some commentators, a couple, argue, or at least they suggest this in the commentary, that Rebecca was in fact obeying God. She was setting this up in order to obey God and to keep the way that God had willed for this to happen, right? And, you know, as it's old, he probably forgot is the argument. So then Rebecca remembers what God promised her when the babies were in the womb. And Rebecca's doing the type of obedience. Model wife, right? I don't see that. And most don't, actually. See, I don't see how tricking and deceiving your husband, even if the means of good, can ever be considered good. And actually, look at the end of chapter 26, those last two verses where it talks about Esau's wives. It says that those wives had made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. So what Rebecca was doing here wasn't motivated by obedience to God. She wasn't surrendering herself to the will of God as what he had planned. No. She was doing just what Isaac was doing. She was playing favorites. like that's my favorite thing. I don't like ACOG walnuts. They make life better for me, so I want to shake up with the best thing in my life. Here she is doing her thing for her own purposes and for her own will, right? By the way, they have been married, but like, the son of Jacob was 40. And then also, you saw 40 being married, those two wives. And then in this story, now we don't have, we do have the exact ages. Esau was 77. If you do the math back from when Jacob and Joseph ended, you have to look way back. You see that, you know, they have been married for 47 years. So this marriage that Esau took, without his parents' approval, by the way, was making life good for them, and that wasn't going to change it. They weren't newlyweds anymore. They're 47, likely even had children, right? Two wives, the others, who probably had some grandkids too. Life was better for them because of that. And Rebecca did not want Esau to get this. They were close to us. Then Jacob decides to go to verse 14. So Esau took them and brought them to his mother, and his mother prepared delicious food, such as his father loved. They also loved being deceived by their food. Then Jacob took the best garments of Esau, her older son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And the skins of the young goat she put on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. And she put the delicious food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. And the plot set, they're ready to try and deceive Isaac. And Jacob enters. Verse 18. So he went into his father and said, "My father!" He said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn." That was lie number one. "I have done as you had told me." That was lie number two. I didn't tell Jacob anything. "Now sit up and eat of my game." Probably lie number three, because that's my opinion. That's two young goats, right? "That your soul may bless me." Three lies, real quick. But I said to the son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" You starting to put the pieces together, like, "Wow, I just sent you away, and you're back here in no time at all. That doesn't make sense." And then Jacob answers, "Because the Lord your God granted me success." Lie number four. Probably didn't give him success in taking the name. He didn't take the name. He's probably taking the Lord's name in vain here and using God to justify what he did. That's not good. Jacob's not, like I said, he's not the model son. Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may see you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau." So Isaac's still not sure, right? So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, who felt him, and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." So I guess that was some hands, or maybe the clothing. I can cover that up. Funny though, because Esau is actually in the room here, and his dad's like, "This voice is Jacob's voice." Wouldn't Esau object? Right? Wouldn't he be like, "Hey, Dad, this is me, Esau, like, this is my voice," right? You'd think that, but then that would be a sign for Isaac, like, this one probably isn't actually Esau, but Isaac did not recognize him. So he blessed him, which is ridiculous. He said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He's still not sure though, right? He answered, once again, here's another lie. So I guess then he said, verse 25 here, "Bring it near to me, that I may eat of my son's game and bless you." He brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank a little extra in the wine, just to be sure. And his father Isaac said to him, "Come near and kiss me, my son." So he came near and kissed him. Smelled the smell of his garment and blessed him and said, "See the smell of my son. It has the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed." Can you imagine if they did that in a court of law today? Right? If they had a witness and blind, it's like, anything to smell him, right? Like, you think Isaac could have called, you know, a witness? Like, I'm not really sure if you really are Esau. So, hey, a servant, you know, he's blind. The servant's probably were within earshot. We definitely know Rebecca was. She's great at listening. You know, and wine, and that he could serve you, and that he bow to you, be lord over your brothers, and may his mother son bow down to you, so to be everyone who praises you, and blessed to be everyone who blesses you. There's the blessing. He's done it, right? Jacob has deceived him. This blessing is pretty sweet, too, right? It's like this is a view of the earth. May you succeed and prosper in everything you do for your animals, when you grow crops, plant grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you, all the surrounding nations, city nations they live near, right? Be lord over your brothers, by the way, like me, Jacob here, God, other brothers. Why else would he mention this? Isaac probably didn't only have Rebecca as his wife. There was probably other concubines. The old scripture only mentions Rebecca explicitly, but where else are these other brothers coming from? I don't think that an old Isaac, who's 137 years at this time, I don't think he's expecting his wife Rebecca to have more children. So who are these other brothers? Probably from another wife, but we don't know for sure. And then another son called out to you. And in the last bit, this is the only part of the Abrahamic covenant that is reiterated in Jacob here. The only part. He missed the land promise. He missed the promise to bless the nations. He missed all those things. And he got to that, you know, blessed be everyone who praises you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. That's enough to confirm that the blessing that he received, Jacob received, was, in fact, the same as God's promises that he made to Abraham. There's a lot more to the story, isn't there, right? Here's when the things really heat up. There's 30 now. As soon as Isaac has finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob has scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac, 5 minutes later, Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. He also prepared a delicious meal and brought it to his father. You know, let's say 40 minutes, an hour later, he's in. Get the blessing from his father, Isaac, right? He said to his father, let my father arise, and even his son's being, that you may bless me. His father, Isaac, said to him, who are you? That's not good, right? He answered, I am your son, your firstborn, Esau. And Isaac trembled very violently. Not good. He said, who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And he all four detainers that blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed. As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. That is, Isaac said, your brother, and I'll put it together, your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing. Esau said, is he not rightly named Jacob, which means the son of your brother, that's how he came out of the room? And he has cheated me these 2 times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. And he said, he saw continuing, have you not restored the blessing for me? It's got to be something desperate. Desperate. As the answer to such he saw, behold, I have made him lord over you. And all his brothers, there it is again, I have given it to him for servants. And with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son? I have nothing left. It all belongs to your brother Jacob. Let's talk to his father. How did you go? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. He was 77 years old at this time. This was a blessing he had waited his whole life for. gone. That's not how I was lying to her. That's the story, you know, that's the point of the story, right? But that's what happens sometimes. Everything belongs to Jacob. And Esau weeps to believe what's happening. And he begs his father for a blessing. And then Isaac gives him this. Technically, it's a blessing, but really, it's more of a prediction. This is not good news for him. Look at what he says in verse 39. And Isaac his father answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall I go and be." That's not nice. Away from the view of heaven on high. Or, of course, by your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from the neck. This is passage in Hebrews 11 today. This is shocking, by the way, what the author of Hebrews says about this exchange. Look what he says. By faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. What? How can Isaac, by faith, give a blessing to Jacob when he doesn't even know it's Jacob? How does that make any sense? One commentator puts it this way. He said, well, the resolution at the end suggests that at this point, Isaac begins to put it all together. His purpose was thwarted, but the divine purpose was not. Isaac neither can nor will seek to turn back what has happened. But by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau. You guys remember in the blessing Isaac gave Esau? He said in it that you will serve your brother. He was just confirming what he wanted to do. This is how Isaac blessed him both of them. And by the way, look at this prophecy. It's a big prophecy. What Isaac said to Esau here is remarkably accurate for close to 2,000 years of history. There's no other way that he could have predicted this unless God told him this, right? It's prophetic. Esau and the neighbor's descendants became Edom. They moved to the southeast region on the other side of the Jordan. This is Ammon and Moab, or Moab, Ammon, and then Edom. They lived in a mountain range. It wasn't a great place to live. They were always fighting with the other nations. When the Israelites entered the promised land, they went around the Jordan on the east side. They came to Edom, and Edom did not let them pass. For almost the entire monarchy of Israel, Edom was subdued by the nation of Israel, just as predicted here. But then, eventually, they grew restless and they broke off the yoke of slavery that Israel had imposed on them. You guys remember Babylon? 586 BC, one enter the king, and Israel did, and Babylon came and tumbled Judah and Jerusalem, destroyed the temple of God, right? And then Edom came in after and raped and pillaged the people in the stuff out there. It was awful. Go to read about it. Psalm 137, Obadiah, and parts of Lamentations were all inspired by what Edom did. They broke the yoke of slavery that was over their head. Just as Isaac predicted 1,500 years before. Eventually, Babylon destroyed them too. Now that's what that is long, right? About 30 years later, they tried to rebuild in that mountain range, and then we get that passage in Joshua 1. We're going to talk about how people destroyed Edom and Esau no matter what. They will never rebuild, they will never succeed, and they never did. Eventually, they moved to Israel, in the southeast region, and they became the nation of the people called the Edomians. Edom, Edomian, very similar. Out of that nation came someone named Herod. He was an Edomian. And what did he try to do? He tried to kill Jesus when he was a baby. Remember that? Just as Isaac predicted, that you will live by the sword. Just like that, right? 2,000 years of prophecy fulfilled, predicted, unbelievable. Go back to Esau now. He's not going to take this ball, right? He's going to, you know, oh man, you know, I was wrong. I got so bad. I definitely didn't deserve this anyway because I married his wife without my parents' permission and I haven't lived a great life, you know, so he's going to humbly repent, correct? Yeah, that's what it says, right? days of mourning for my father are approaching, then I will kill my brother Jacob. The plan would have worked, except for who? The great listener. Who's the great listener in the story? Rebecca, right? The only two, only thing she does is listen. Verse 42. The words that Esau, her older son, were told to Rebecca. That's really a great comment. She sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, arise, meet the woman, my brother, in Haran, that's where Abraham and Sarah came from. Be there, and stay with him a while, until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him." He'll forget, for sure. That I will send and bring you from there. Why should it be bereft? I shall lose both of you in one day. This is the last story we get of Rebecca. We don't get anything else. She's very listening, always had her own purposes in mind. And she wants to save Jacob, right? What good is it if Jacob gets the blessing and he's murdered? So she sends him away to save his life. But that's not the only reason she sent him away. Here is actually a good thing that happens that Rebecca does about you. Look at verse 46, the last verse of the chapter. And Rebecca said to Isaac, "I loathe hate my life because my Hittite woman, she can't stand it. Jacob married one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land. What good would my life be to me?" She wants to save Jacob's life, yes, but she also wants him to marry from within his family. Look at all of the characters in this work. There's Jacob, Esau, Isaac, and Rebecca. All of them lose. None of them win here, do they? Everyone's doing their own thing for their own purposes, their own way, and every single one of them loses. None of them really gets what they want. Look at Isaac. He wanted to bless Esau, his favorite son. But in the end, that didn't happen, and he was made to look not very great. Esau, well, he lost everything he ever wanted. He was waiting for this his whole life. Right. He lost. Well, what about Jacob? He got the blessing, right? But Jacob was forced to flee from his angry brother with nothing to his name. He basically barely survived and became a servant to Laban for 14 and 20 years. And Rebecca, she got her way. Jacob received the blessing. Jacob's not going to marry those Hittite women, right? Oh, but she never, most likely, she never saw his favorite son Jacob again. She was probably dead by before Jacob came back. Oh, and those Hittite woman, yeah, she had to live with them because she continued to live with Esau. She lived with them for the rest of her life. She lost too. Every single one of these characters lost. They were all fighting for their own purposes in their own ways. They're all trying to establish their will and not God's, right? And they all lost. They all paid the price. It was miserable. The family, the awful family they grew up in, right? Kids hating each other, parents choosing favorites. And look at the marriage here. Even in verse 46, before Isaac and Rebecca talk to each other. There it is. Great. I want a great marriage. You should talk to each other sometimes, right? Do the last. Chapter 1. Whose will was the only one who was accomplished? Who was it? God's will. What God had told Rebecca that Jacob would receive the blessing, that he would be greater than his brother Esau, the younger, right? That is what happened. And Jesus puts it this way. His little family was fraught with ambition, jealousy, envy, lying, deceit, coveting, malice, manipulation, stubbornness, and especially in this case, stupidity. And everyone broken family. God refuses to sure, there are many lessons we can take about this on parenting, on marriage, on all those things, right? This is the main idea of the sex tape, is it? See, the main idea is this: whether we live to God's will or not, no matter what, God always accomplishes His will. Every single time. Even when we sin against Him. Even when we sin and do wrong. Even when we just disobey God flat out, we just can't stand Him. God always accomplishes His will, no matter what. And don't we see this lived out in the gospel? He was always God's will. And this is exactly how the redemption of us happened through Jesus, right? Just remember Herod? He was in the lineage of one of the Edomites, and he tried to kill Jesus like a baby. He failed. And Satan, during Jesus' earthly ministry, tried to tempt him to serve himself. We also know Satan would often come within human possessed people to try to distract Jesus from his message. He failed too. Jesus kept preaching and kept healing people, right? His disciples, they wanted Jesus to conquer Rome. Not God's plan, not God's will, but mine be done, right? That didn't happen. The Pharisees, you guys remember, they hated Jesus. They hated God. Like Esau hated Jacob. They tried to kill Jesus. Like Esau. And they succeeded. One of Jesus' own disciples betrayed Jesus. They killed God the Son. Who ended up winning anyways? God did. Because that was always God's plan. Jesus died, yes. He was murdered, yes. He was innocent, yes. He rose again on the third day. Death did not hold him. And his death accomplished our redemption. Because of his death, we are now able to be forgiven. God can look at us and say, Jared, yes, you are a wretched, sinful human being, and yet I see my son's righteousness when I look at you because you have faith in Jesus. That's the gift of God. That's not something that I could do to earn. It's not something any of us could do to earn it. It's something that God has done for us through Jesus' death. This was always God's plan. And will always accomplish His will. So then the question for us is this, as we look to apply this, is this: why oppose God? Why live in rebellion to Him? Why refuse to submit to Him in His will and what He wants in His word? If God always wins anyways, why do I live to Him? There's no reason to. But seriously, examine yourself. Take a look at your own life. Are there areas where you are still refusing surrender fully to God? Maybe you're an unbeliever. This is your first time here. Maybe you've grown up in the church. You've never really understood the gospel. Whatever it is, surrender your life to God. Surrender everything. Jesus, you are my Lord. Or maybe you have done that. Maybe you're a Christian. You've attended church your whole life. You're baptized. You want to live for Him. But yes, if we're all being honest with ourselves, we all have areas where we fall short. We all have areas where we want control rather than giving it to God. For instance, a few examples like with our money. But then, you know, that's for some of us if you're in that stage. Or time. Maybe for some it's your career. What for me in high school, I wanted to do my thing, God had other plans. Maybe you're someone here who people are always telling you, you should consider missions, or consider ministry, or consider this. And yet you may even feel like that's what God might have for you, and yet you resist. You'd rather get paid. You'd rather have a nice career and see what God wants. Maybe for you, you need to consider surrendering that part to God. But we do that with so many things. We do it with relationships too, don't we? Like our marriages, our spouses. Sometimes we have these unrealistic expectations that my spouse, my wife, my husband will fulfill me or complete me. They'll do everything for me. We expect them to do everything and be awesome for us, and yet we know they can. At some point they let us down. It's not fair to place that burden on my spouse. But more than that, the only one who can principles to the gospel. Principles, that's a radically changing thing. It's a terrific book, by the way, but he says this. It's called B. He says, God, I didn't give you your children to build your reputation, but to publicly proclaim his. That's tough, right? Don't we all have our own plans and our own desires and wishes for our kids that we want them to do? I do. I'm trying to be the best soccer player in the world, and I coach her, and she's not. Right? She's definitely not. You know, we place these expectations, these burdens on our kids. We want these kids to succeed and do this and obey this. Why? So often it's because we want others to look at our kids and see how good their parents are. Shouldn't we surrender like that? Shouldn't we say, God, whatever happens, I want to parent and raise my kids the way that you want me to, as found in your word. Would you consider giving that to God, too? And there's so many things. Think of your prayer life, right? When we're prayerless, when we live prayerless lives, in essence, we're telling God that I've got all my worries, my anxieties, my fears, I don't need to bring them to you as you tell us to. I can handle them. Go to him in prayer, giving more and more. There's so many examples of this. You can think of anxieties or worries or stresses about anything. You can think of giving him our retirement plans, giving him our investment goals, giving him our ministry plans for those in ministry of some capacity, right? If you surrender everything we have and everything we want to him in all areas of our lives, at the end of the story, I think this year, January 6th, there's a team Ireland Martinique called the Golden Lions, the soccer team. They have won their division in the Caribbean area, and as a result, they got the honor of playing, they were connected to the French league in France. They got the honor of joining the French Cup in the round of 64, and they got drawn against a team called Lille. Lille is one of the biggest teams in France. They're way bigger and way better. The distance for the small team from the Caribbean to travel, 13,000 kilometers round trip. That's a big distance, right? And by the way, this is a story of David and Goliath, where the small team from the Caribbean island shows up and beats the big team in France. That's not going to happen. It is an exotic box. The score is 12-0. It's 7-0. And Lille, the big France team, they haven't even played their best players. They rested them. I mean, imagine traveling 10 hours one way to take Lille and lose 12-0. I can imagine the scenarios back were probably even worse, right? It's awful. They lost. And then, this is exactly what it's like when we receive this from God, isn't it? When we don't want to listen to him, when we want to do things our way. But what Jesus said, surrender everything to him. Reminded so much in this passage of his sovereignty, of by grace he chose Jacob rather than Esau, when he was the second born. And in the same way, when he grieved, I'm not deserving of anything, and that you have graciousness. But we also see in this story here people refusing to surrender to the Lord, doing things their way for their purposes. And sometimes we do that too. God, change us, change our hearts. Help us surrender everything to you. Let us give up the things we hold dear that